Okay, so let's get started. Okay, we're talking about this is, I guess, the arithmetic. The first, we're in the arithmetic section. How many people have all four of the problems done? Somehow none. Nobody seems to have them. Okay. How many people have three of the problems done? Good man. Okay, one with three. The judge means it passed the judge, right? How many people have two of the problems done? Okay, one more. Good man. How many have one of the problems done? Okay, we have none of the problems done. Okay, so we have a lot of nuns. Is that because the problems were hard this week or because midterms are coming up? I'm hearing midterms.
Other assignments.
Okay, so let's again, of course, how this fits with other assignments. This is more interesting than other assignments, hopefully. But. I want to give you a free pass, although I do understand there are things of midterm. But let's talk about the problems a little bit at first, and then let's see if there's anything interesting. How many people who didn't get any of them, did you try any of the problems? Which
reverse
ones did you try?
Reverse and
add. Reverse and add, okay. How many people got reverse and add? You get, which one didn't you get?
Archaeologist. Alone.
You didn't get archaeologist. So which one didn't you get? And the last one. Okay. And so which is easiest, let's say? Presumably the reverse and add is basically straightforward once you know how to do arithmetic. Right? Did you guys have to write your own high-precision arithmetic to do this?
Java wouldn't allow integers long enough, but if you use an unsigned int in C, it's long enough to handle it. So,
right. So one trick that actually, the first thing in the book that I actually regret not having in there is not mentioning the idea of the unsigned integer. Okay. So if you have a normal long integer, I guess in C, you can get basically 2 to the 31 plus or minus 1. In plus or minus 2 to the 31. Okay, that's the range of integers.
That's long.
That's long, I guess. Or it's hard for me to say. The best probably is somewhat upon what your system is. But I believe that on most modern computers these days, ints are 30. Well, the machines you work on, you tell me. Are your ints 32 bits?
I think they're 32 bits.
Okay, so these days we live in a world of 32 bits. Okay, I am an old enough man, I remember you programming on 8-bit computers, okay, so a 16-bit integer was considered a good thing, okay, but now I think integers are in general 32 bits long, 32 bits long. How long are longs?
64, I think.
So you're convinced that a long is 64 bits?
I believe so.
What I'm a little bit confused by is then why did you have trouble with one of the problems is not being large enough to store an integer if you have longs at your disposal?
You know what? Actually, I remember thinking that was a problem initially, and then I remember going back to it and going, oh, wait, that's not it. And I think you can do the whole thing in longs and not use unsigned.
Okay. So the question of how you represent integers. There is this hack where you are allowed to declare, at least in C, an integer as being unsigned. It means that instead of going from plus or minus 32 to minus 2 to the 31 to plus 2 to the 31, it goes basically from 0 to 2 to the 32 minus 1. Okay? So that gives you an extra bit which might be helpful. This is in C, presumably in C++ also by inheritance. Does Java have such a thing, or Java probably doesn't even tell you about machine integers? They try to keep you away from.
You can actually get to the integers, and they tell you how long they are. They follow the ANSI standard, but they don't have unsigned.
Okay, so here's that's one extra bit. If you really need that extra bit for something, you should be able to play games with plus and minuses. You know, with negatives. You know, by just sort of having this offset of 2 to the 31. That you add to it or mentally add or subtract to it from it when you need it. But anyway, so that's something to keep in mind. So what was the on the reversive add, was there anything magical about that, or was that basically you had to re-implement? Did you have to actually implement long arithmetic, or no? No? Used unsigned, and the reason was because it only asked for, what you call it? If I remember, the largest integer was only,
4 billion.
Oh, it was a measly 4 billion. Would you have been able to get away with long instead of unsigned? You're not sure. Is that what you did, or you used long or you unsigned, or you don't know?
Basically, the problem, I don't even remember what I ended up with.
Yeah.
I thought I was having a problem in one area, and it turned out after many hours of working at it, I was just interpreting one small part of the question correctly.
Okay. So,
But yeah, you can use long or unsigned.
Long or unsigned integers. Okay, fine. Again, the thing I regretted not putting in the book was mentioning the word unsigned integer. Okay, so in fact, I actually wrote my publisher and asked if I could stick that in still, or if it's too late in the production process. I haven't heard from them. But okay, so reverse and add is basically straightforward once you have your access to your integers. How many lines of code was this? Or
not including, the input, output, and all that kind of junk. 10 lines.
10 lines in Java? You're saying 10 real lines in Java?
Actually, I think I ended up doing it in C.
Okay.
I thought I was having a Java problem.
Okay, 10, and that's consistent with what you're saying? 100 in C++. Okay, any questions about this problem? Yeah.
I'm not sure. How would you reverse the number?
Okay, so how would you reverse a number? Let's think about this thing. Suppose I have an integer, 496. Reversing the digits would be 695, right? That's, I think, clear. How would you go about doing it? Here are some ideas as to how you might go about reversing a number. Okay? I'll try,
Well, as long as the number is greater than 0, I'll loop, and I'll take that number modulus 10, and add that onto the result, multiply by 10, and then I'll set my number that I'm testing equal to itself, divided by 10.
So you're saying it's something like, what you're saying is you've got your n, and we'll call this thing the reverse event, rn. Okay? I think it's simple for prescription. How we're going to do this. On reverse end, how would we do it? Basically, the inner loop is going to be that the last digit is going to be what? N mod 10. Right? What you're now going to do is to say that to reverse this thing, how do we reverse this? Okay. Now that I have this number, how can I incorporate this into the reverse? I want to put this at the beginning of the reverse. Okay? How would I do something like that? Yeah?
I started out with rn equals 0, and then each time I run through it, I just say rn equals rn times 10, which moves all the current digits up by one notch, and then add LD last digit. I do it the other way. You have to multiply the new digit by 10.
Yes. So basically what you want to say here is something like, what I would say is, let's say digits. B is going to be equal to what digit are we in? Okay, a digit maybe is equal to 0 initially. And the basic step is going to be something, the loop is going to be something like Rn is going to be equal to the last digit times 10 to the d plus Rn. Okay, is this something like what we're talking about doing? Okay, and something like d goes to d plus 1. And, we have to now adjust n and say n is equal to n div 10.
Wouldn't that be putting the
Well, let's just think of this more. Okay, let's think what I'm doing here is right. Okay, I may be doing it wrong. 496, what I want to do with the 6 is to put 6 in the most significant spot. Right? So is this doing what I want? Isn't it clear to me that it is doing what I want? Right? So what I could do here, maybe what you're suggesting is something instead that looks like this.
Right, I was saying basically to take Rn, multiply it by n, and then add LB. So that way, you're always sticking, a digit on, but then whenever you add another digit, it's getting shifted to the left.
So let's look and see what happens when we do this thing. Execute this basic loop. Okay? The first time, the last digit is going to be equal to 6. So let's be to take our little table here, what LD is, RN is, and N. N starts out at 596. RN equals 0. LD is originally equal to 6. RN is going to be what it was times 10 plus the last digit. RN is now going to be equal to 6. And then N, we think N did D. That's integer division. That means chop off the remainder. That gets us down to 59. What's the next step? The last digit is now going to be 9. RN is going to be what? What RN was times 10, that's 69. And N did this is now going to be equal to 5. What's the next step? The last digit is equal to 5. Multiply this by 10 and add 5, we get a 5. Okay, that I claim is the reversal. Okay, does everybody sort of see how it's working? Okay? So, this is probably, there's a lot of clumsy ways to do it, but this is probably the basic loop, the simple basic loop to do it. Okay, any questions? Actually, this idea of modding something to extract digits. Okay, and multiplying to shift digit places is sort of a common thing to do in arithmetic. That's basically what those are the basic operations you do in arithmetic all the time. Okay, and so it's important to be thinking in terms of those kind of operations. Any other questions about this? Okay, we sort of agree that this can be done. To reverse it should be easy. Adding it to its reversal should be easy. Okay, and so one should be able to get going on that. Okay, any questions? Archaeologist Lima, what was the other one that you did? You did two of them. Let's talk about the easy ones first. Yes. Ones, okay. One seems like kind of an interesting one. So this one said that you were given a number, one, and I guess you wanted to know the smallest amount. How many digits are in the smallest such multiple of it? So if they gave you the number 7, how much do I have to multiply 7 by to get 1111, or to get something that's all ones? And last time we sort of agreed that 7 could be multiplied by something to get 111, right? What is that? What is 7 times what? We'll give you 111. 37, is that right? No. Oh, okay, so if I have a 3, how do I get a 3 to be equal to a multiple of 3 to be all 1 ones? And 3 times 37 certainly will do it. What about 7? What do I have to multiply 7 by to get all 1s? Okay? Now, there's two ways you could do this problem, it would seem to me. One way is you write a little routine to test if you're all ones, okay, and then just try different integers, keep trying different integers until you succeed, okay? How would we test if a given number has all one digits? Okay, what would be the basic loop to do that? Yeah. Keep an odd number, because a number could be odd because there's a 3 there. Yeah, keep peeling off the last digit just like you did here. I'd say, are you 1, 1, 1, 1, 1? So in principle, writing a search and test program should not be hard, but it might be very inefficient. Is it too inefficient to check all possible values? So what are we saying here? Well, what is exactly does it say? Let's make some sense here. It says, what are the integers here? Does it say anything about what the largest one is? For each output line, give the smallest x such that basically how many ones are in that number. Okay? So I see nothing here. First of all, it says that it's limited to machine integers, okay, or even logs. Okay? So that's my first observation. So it's not obvious to me that you can do this by brute force testing. Okay? Did your algorithms test? Did it work by brute force testing? Or did something smarter?
Oh,
yeah? Right. Oh, I see. The last one, the input was that had 12 digits of ones. I see. So that tells me that it won't fit in an int. Okay. So that's a trouble. It might fit in a long. Okay. So what would we be looking for? We would conceivably be trying, your loop would be to basically try all integers that are not two and multiples of 2 and 5 and see whether that gets, it gives you that. But that I think is going to be very time consuming. And as you can see, dealing with large integers. Is there any other way that we can use this to try to figure out what the integer is? Yeah?
I mean, I didn't do it, but I think as you do, you take, let's say, start with 1, and then you divide by the number that you need in some session, but see, like 1 divided by 3. And then if that doesn't work, then you can multiply 1 by 1 times 10 plus 1, and you get 11. And check if it's a division, since you've got an integer. And if that doesn't work, then you can multiply it again by 10 and add 1. That way you always get 1. So you multiply it 12 times, so you get 12 ones.
Okay, I'm not sure I see that. What do you say?
Alright. You have to, okay, first you divide 1 by 3.
So he only given his input is this. We now want to try to figure out what is the amount such that the 3 times x that we get all ones. Okay?
So can you try, x has to be an integer, it can't be a float value. So when you do 1 divided by 3 and you get a float, then it doesn't go into that value. So then you find it, you do 11 divided by 3. The way you get 11 is by, you multiply 1 times 10. And
add 1. Okay, so you want to say, your equivalent, you want to basically solve the expression x equals 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. You're going to iterate on the number of digits. Okay, so divided by, you have this number, and you want to figure out, does this divide this number equally? Okay.
I don't think there's actually any limit on how many ones that can take.
Might be a large number of ones. Okay. But now, can you do this division quickly or decide if this divides it? Really, what you really need to know is this a multiple of that? That's really what you want to know. Okay. Yeah.
Well, could you try to do the listen, divide, if you're given an input, divide it into 1, like 3 divided into 1. You're going to get some kind of remainder. So what you can do is take that remainder, multiply it by 10, and add 1 to it, and then see if that's divisible by the number. Because you're only really concerned with the remainder. You're not interested in knowing what that number is, you know how many ones that are produced.
Okay. So is that what you guys do? Okay, so how'd you do it in particular? Tell me again, because I'm not yet sure I understand this.
Either.
Oh, okay, either. We'll have to talk.
We can talk a lot. Let's see.
What's your name behind you, by the way?
Aaron.
Okay, what are you?
generating signals of what that kind of logical can, if you can actually make it a point, right?
Right. Wait, so what do we now know? We now know that this is not... Wait, so what...
Yes, yeah, so it's a signal of what. You can know that that's not a logical can.
Yeah.
So you can actually make it a point.
Right. I see. So what you want to say is you want to compute what is the remainder. What is n mod, what I will say, 1 to the d, which means 1 d repetitions of 1. This way, no, the other way around. 1 to the d mod n. You let that be equal to x. If this was equal to 0, you were done, right? And if it is not equal to 0, then what you want to do is to say basically now, let's say that you're going to say y equals 1 to the d. Let's say 1 to the d. Now what you really want to say here is that y is equal to 10 times y plus 1, that makes it larger. Okay? But actually, no. You just want to update x, the remainder. What? Okay? And now what you want to now know is what is y mod n? Okay? Now, how do you compute y mod n? Okay? We agree that this is really what we want to now know. What is y mod n? And the question is, how do you do it without an arbitrary long integers? Is that really what we're coming down to?
Ten
y plus what? What you really want to say is that x...
The y equals... Say, the y equals 10x plus 1. So the remainder times
x. Y is equal to 10x plus 1. Okay? So what you're trying to do, I think, is to maintain the remainder here mod n. So the largest integer you're ever dealing with is n. Is that true or false? Okay, so what are you doing? I'm not seeing yet. You want to come up, you're welcome to try to do it. Okay? We're going to talk about modular arithmetic when we get to number theory in a few weeks from now. Okay? But this is maybe an example where by cleverly storing,
say you start with
what do you have
here? With 1.
Yeah.
And divided by 3. Right?
Yeah.
So the remainder is 1.
Yeah.
So you add, multiply by 10, and then add 1. You get 11.
Right.
And then divide by 3. The remainder is 2. Right?
Yeah.
And then 10 to 1. And divide by 3 is 7. And that's it. So you did,
so what is this working? What is working here? Okay? Let's see why this is working.
You have a sequence of 1.
Yeah?
And if that and if you couldn't add an extra 1 to it, and if that will be a logical n, right?
Yeah.
So you can just take the remainder of this and put down 1.
Let us think what we're saying here. But let us look and see what the invariant that you're trying to claim is true. Okay? So you want to claim that if n divides the number r followed by a 1, okay? This is really what you're trying to tell me.
Yeah.
which means basically 10 times R plus 1.
Wait a second, okay. I'm still not seeing the invariant here, okay? That you're trying to come up with a tight proof of, okay?
I can show you how I came up with this, and it made it a little bit clearer for me
once I go ahead.
What I did is, I looked at it like, very similar to when you're dividing. So, for instance, if I had a 3, and I know down here, up here I want some kind of number with no decimal point after it. And I know that I have some number of 1s up here. I don't know. So then, what I do is I go 3 and 1. Oh, no, I'm going to end up with a remainder. And then usually what you do is something like this. You go, oh, no, 3 doesn't get there. I write a little 1 remainder. Oh, 3 into 11. Oh, what is that? And eventually, you're going to end up with some number up here. Whatever this is, it doesn't matter. You just worry about the remainder down here. And as soon as this remainder, you're going to end up with, like, say, 2 here. You go 3 and 21, oh, 7, and the remainder is 0.
Then that's when you stop.
That's when you stop, because you're just perfect.
Okay? So then what you're doing is simulating long division, okay? And noticing that the real algorithm in long division is the following. Basically, that what you're doing is you're finding the remainder up to some point. In other words, when you're dividing, A by, A divided by x1, x2, x3, you find what is the remainder, the quotient went up here, okay? The remainder went down here, okay? And it was perfectly divided if at the time that you ended your integer, your remainder was 0. That was really sort of the point here. And we can hear we have the funny situation that we know this number. Actually, I guess it's right. So when we ran out of this number, at the same time we had a quotient to 0, then the number was perfectly divisible, right? And so what you're saying now is we can end this number wherever we want, namely the first place that we do the division. Okay? And therefore, what you're basically going to be doing, and what is the basic step in division? I mean, again, I can show you my code for doing long division if you want. It's in the book. But basically what you do at each step is to add another integer in here. You take the remainder, you're putting it next to, dropping the next digit down is really multiplying this by 10 and adding that last digit, right? What is the advantage of this approach, though? How big can the remainder be? Okay?
It's small. I mean, it's going to be smaller than,
smaller than n.
Right.
Okay? That's the important thing that's interesting here. Although we might have a huge, huge integer here, the fact is that the remainder is always smaller than the quote, I guess the divisor, I think it's divisor is what we're saying here. Okay? So we know that even though this number 1111111111 might be incredibly large, the numbers that we're working with here can't be that large. So if you could read it in and it fit within a reasonable integer, okay, a normal long or something like that, then the whole operation fits within a reasonable law. Does everybody see that? Okay, so once you do this, this is probably also relatively simple to program. How many lines are we talking about?
Like
10. 10, okay, 20, or something like this. Okay, is that consistent with what you're saying? Okay, so again, these are problems we have to think a little bit, okay?
Actually, can anybody come up with a proof that it actually converges? That this always works if you have an integer, that you always do eventually end up with an integer that is a multiple of 0, that you always end up with something that's all 1s? I'm not sure I have one in mind, but I'm just thinking.
How do you do a proof of that?
Well,
what I would think about is the following. What do I think about the last digit? Under what conditions can I make? Let's say I want to now, I know I want to find a number that is all ones. Okay? That means that I'm going to be multiplying my number n, this is n, by some unknown number to get all ones. What do I have to do? What do I know about the last digit of n in order to get a 1? It's odd.
These two numbers you're multiplying also have to be odd.
Right. Well, but let's say if we do anything else more. We know that the last digit of n is either going to be a number, you know, basically, it's not a multiple of 2 or 5. That means it's either a 1, a 2, no, a 3, not a 5, a 7, or a 9. Right? Those are the only four possibilities. What then must the last digit of our number be in order to get that, of our unknown multiplier? Okay, this is n. We are given what n is. If the last digit is 1, what do we know about the last digit of the unknown number? It's got to be mapped to the 1. And what if it was a 7, a 3? What do we multiply, what digit do we multiply, what digit do we multiply 3 by to get a 1? Only a 7. Okay? And this one only by a 3. And this one only by a what? A 9. So what is true is I certainly know now in general, I can compute the last digit of my number. Okay? And now, my question is, can I repeat this operation? Okay? Now I have this 1. When I do my next, now part of the problem is I'm going to get carries over into the next digit. Okay? How do I multiply? I mean, my sense is if I go and work back and do some kind of analysis on what the last digit successively has to be, I believe I can work it through so that I never run into a contradiction. Okay? But this is something that I think needs a little more thought before I can really boldly claim it. Okay? But again, we start talking about number theory in a couple of weeks. This is the kind of thing that we would want to be thinking about. Okay? Is modular arithmetic and number theory. Again, it's an interesting question of how you manipulate the digits. Any questions here? Okay, so this we sort of agree is a doable problem. What are the other problems that we're sort of talking about or thinking about? The archaeologist dilemma, you got that one. No.
The one that I have.
Oh, you didn't get the multiplication game.
Yeah.
Or you didn't get multiplication game. Let's think a little bit about the archaeologist's dilemma. How do we do this one? What is the problem saying? Well, let's think what it says here. It's kind of a cute one, I think. That it says here that you've got a, what is the problem? The problem says it's input you are given, a collection of integers that are supposed to be the prefix of a number that's a power of 10, a power of 2, right? And you want to now figure out what is the smallest power of 2 such that these are the leading digits. Is that all that the problem asks for, or is there some other condition?
The length of the entire number has to be at least 2 times the length of what that is plus 1, i.e. that the hidden digits are at least 1 greater than the number of
leading. Okay, so we're saying that this is a very, very long integer. Okay. Right? It's somehow that it's a long integer, we have a small number of digits up front. Right?
Potentially one.
potentially wrong.
Okay.
So what could we do? The naive algorithm would be to presumably loop for I goes from 1 to infinite, or to sufficiently large, compute 2 to the I, and then basically compare the first few digits with this. Right? And what's wrong with that? What? Might take too long. Does it give us any information at all about the size of the integers?
No, because, I mean, you know what n is. N can't be bigger than 2 billion something, but n is only the digits that are visible. We have an arbitrary number of digits that are invisible after that.
I see. So you're telling me that this number is not so, so large. Okay? But this is potentially larger.
Right. And on top of that, down at the bottom, there's the implication that they say if there is no power of 2, then print the sentence, no power of 2, which
says that in principle there might be some that are not realizable.
Right, which may or may not be a red herring.
Okay. So is there any way we can sort of keep track of what only the first several digits of this thing is? Okay. You could sort of build up a table of 2 to the I as large as you want, but I seems to be potentially can get very, very large here. Okay? So you're not going to get very far just tabulating 2 to the I. Is there any way we can go here and just keep track of the beginning part? But it's a thing that I want to say. You want to keep you want to know what is the prefix of 2 sub the I, right? And you'd like to now, there's two different possibilities. What is the compute the prefix of 2 to the I? Okay? On demand. The other is to compute the prefix of 2 to the I as a function of the prefix of 2 to the I minus 1. That's sort of what you're sort of saying. Okay? So anybody see those are two different possible approaches. What is if we keep this prefix of 2 to the I as we go along? Okay, and then update it.
The other is we compute the prefix of 2 to the I without computing the whole number. Okay? Is it possible to compute the prefix of, let's just stop and think about it. Is it possible to compute the prefix of 2 to the I? What is the first digit of 2 to the I going to be? Okay?
Should be done.
Okay? Can we come up with a way of computing? What is, in general, the first prefix digit of, how would we compute the first digit of 2 to the I?
Well, you go like 2 to 1, that's 2, right? So you can't, we'll say we don't store the first 2 numbers, okay?
Yeah.
So it's 2, then it's 4, then it's 16, so you still store 16, then it's 32, now it's 64. Now, when you get to 128, you only store 12, and you don't care about the 8, okay?
So you letters just keep the first several digits.
Yeah, first several digits.
Yeah, but if you drop the 8, then you're already wrong, because 124 or 126 or 128 is 56.
Yeah, and then you store 24, but see, you only care about the first. Let's say you store 3. What I'm saying is when you store.
Oh, it's just store
because
more
the least significant one, when you double it, it can only affect perhaps this digit, but you only care about this digit. If this is like 100.
So what you want to say here, which I'm not sure I completely agree with, it's an interesting idea, I'm not sure I agree with it. But basically what you're telling me is, you want to compute out of the table of 2 to the I, which we agree is growing rapidly, you want to only compute the first several digits.
Yeah.
And then you think that just multiplying the first several digits by 2 will give you accurate enough information about the first several digits.
Yeah.
That it doesn't roll over. Okay? So let's see if what about this? Can we make that formal? Okay? That somehow what you really want to argue is that all this stuff will not turn that the effect of the other digits won't make too much, won't have too much of an impact. Okay? And it's not obvious to me how much you must keep to do that. Okay, there's something to think about. There might be a way to do it. Okay, yeah?
I don't think it's going to work. I think the average is going
to extract. That's what I came up with. I mean, I kind of tried to do something like this, but I abandoned it after a while. I wasn't going to get to it.
Okay. So let's think about something else, though. Okay, that seems to be a problem. Okay, the problem is going to be sort of, are you going to ever cause some ripplings from here? That the fact that you ignored those digits is no proof, there's not enough of a ripple in here that would wipe out those digits. Okay, so I don't know if I see how to do it. But let me just try the following idea. I have the following idea, which may or may not be interesting. What is the first digit of 2 to the I? Can anyone tell me how to compute the first digit of 2 to the I, in principle?
First.
The left bullet. It's about this digit. You want to know the most significant digit. What is the most significant digit of 2 to the I?
I tried figuring that out, too, and I thought I saw a pattern emerge, and then all of a sudden it disappeared.
Well, in principle, what is it? Okay, relative to our shifting and masking and multiplying kind of ideas. What is the most significant digit? I think it is, if I had to take a guess, I'd say it is 2 to the I div 10 to the j for the largest j that will 2 to the I div 10 to the J. The most significant digit, it seems to me, is this for the largest J, such that their answer is not zero.
What is J?
What? J is something like, okay, I over 3, probably. Okay, why is that? Because somehow, how fast do the base 10 digits emerge when you multiply 2 to the I? How often do you ripple? You know, when you add 3 digits in binary, how much is that multiplying the integer by, a binary integer by? You add 1 integer bit to a number. You're doubling it, right? 2 is by 3 is by 8. So to add a base 10 digit, you're multiplying it by a little bit more than 8. Right? Yeah? Okay, so what I'm just saying is, if we could compute this, 2 to the I, div 2 to the j, okay, then that would actually give us what we want. Okay? If we knew how to compute this, that would enable us to determine the first digit. Okay? Any questions?
Well, I'm not sure. I think when you're saying that, you're saying you want a source key that makes that more sense. But if you look at that, it's going to go back to the same problem, right? Because it's the whole problem that we don't want to compute the whole lot.
You don't want to compute the whole thing, but you really, let's think a little bit as to whether we might be able to compute what this thing is. So, for example, when you're computing this number, okay, what is 2 to the I div 2 to the j? You guys did this integer here. 2 to the I is what? You want to figure out what is the relative thing. You want to, the denominator here is 10 to the j, right? How do you do it when you were doing arithmetic here? Was this 2 to the I over here? So what is the first digit? What you really want to do? Okay. Is there some way that we can sort of make this like it's regular division or base conversion? That's somehow the ideas that I want to try to think about. Okay. Any ideas? Strike a bell? Not a bell? Okay. Let's think about this thing. How might we be able to figure out what the largest digit is?
What I'm thinking now is maybe I'm wrong, okay, is that this is somewhat analogous to a base conversion problem, okay?
Now, really what you want to do is to convert a base 2 number, namely 2 to the I, to its base 10 representation. Okay, is that really what you want to do?
Now you're trying to have a winning answer, by the way, instead of just sort of talking here, okay, it's my job, okay? So how do you do such things? Well, I claim that what we really want to do is to convert, you can think of this as an algorithm that if we could, really what you want to do is to convert the base to the binary number 2 to the I to a base 10 number, to the j, okay? Now, how could we do it? The standard way to do it is what I would say right to left. Okay, how do we, maybe I don't know if we're worth talking about here. Let's talk about different bases, okay, just to sort of get us talking about here. There are lots of different bases of numbers that are interesting, okay? We all know about binary numbers. Binary numbers are base 2, and that's what computers use. Okay? How many people even know what octal is? Do they still teach you what octal is? What? 220, okay? And they teach you about hexadecimal? Why do they teach you about hexadecimal? Does anyone actually, or octal? Does anyone know what's interesting?
It's a very easy way to deal with binary numbers. You can translate from binary to octal or hexadecimal.
Right. Now, what is the hexadecimal number? I know that in a project I've been working on. We've been working, looking at actually bytes in some messy files. What is the hexadecimal number FF? What does that correspond to in binary?
In binary,
what does it mean in binary? What's nice is hexadecimal is a base 16 system, right? And the nice thing is that at base 16, we basically are grouping these things in digits, groups of 4 digits, right? Okay, and the hexadecimal alphabet was 0 through 9, A through F. Okay, the octal alphabet was 0 through 7, right? What would make octal interesting? Okay, how do you convert from octal to binary?
Group to 3.
Group it according to 3. And just while we're on the subject, does anyone know why computer scientists think Christmas is the same as Halloween? Okay. Because octal 31 is the same as decimal 25. Right? Okay? So being able to convert between different bases is an important thing, as we just proven, I guess. Okay? So we agree that representing numbers by bases, what is a base number system? Just double check that. I'm not sure whether this is going to get us to help us understand it. But a base number system, basically what we're doing is we're taking each digit, if we have a base D number system. The last digit is D to the 0, then D to the 1, D to the 2, dot, dot. Okay? And we can write any integer in any, you know, any, we can write in for any given value, integer value of D. The sort of number in that base is well defined. So nothing magic about base 10, we have 10 fingers, and that's why we convert things, you know, base 10. How do we convert numbers from one base to another? Okay, let's think about this as a simple exercise. You did it at one point in high school.
We have to go into binary first and then square it.
Well, not necessarily. Why do you need to do it binary? You were converting bases and numbers in high school without knowing about binary.
Oh,
okay. So how do you actually convert a number to a binary? Or from one base to another? How would you convert a number here? You have a number written in base D, a base B number. How do you convert a base B number to a base C number? Okay. Least common multiple. Not sure I know what you're simply saying. Okay. How do you convert numbers from one base to another? Okay.
Divide it by the base, take the mod, and store it, take it in, and do it again until you get it all the way down.
So what if I want to convert N to base C? What is the last digit in base C? No. What is the last digit in base C?
component C.
Good man. Okay. So if for the last digit, LD is equal to N mod C. Okay. Now we can move in a little bit. It's sort of like the same kind of scheme that we're playing with here. What do I now want to do? The last digit is N mod C. We would like to now, what's going to happen to N after we do it? N is going to be equal to N div C. Right? That's going to somehow give it minus this thing. And what we'd like to say is that our new number, N prime, is going to be equal to the old number N prime times C plus, is this right? Okay, let's think if this actually does the job. Because I think the same kind of scheme that we were doing over here on the blackboard, right? In some sense, peeling the digits off or reversing this thing would basically involve dividing it, you know, converting it to a base 10 representation, right? Let's just think if this is right. How would I, is this going to do the job? Actually, what I think it is instead, it's not quite this. I think it's, So what do we want to have happen? Let's say I want to convert a number 693. Suppose I want to convert that to base 5. How do I go about doing it? Okay. 63 mod 5 is what? Okay. That should be 3. Right? Okay. Now what is left? What's 63 div 5? What do we have left?
12.
What's 12 mod 5?
2.
It'd be 2. What's 12 mod div 2? Div 5. I will believe that 223 is 63 mod 5. Are we right? Let's convince ourselves. This is base 5, right? A base 5 number. Why? That's 3 plus 2 times 5 plus 2 times 5 squared. That's 50. 10 and 3, right? So this is actually what I wanted to do. Actually, it's a little bit different. In fact, the algorithm I think is really this. I think that it's n prime plus c to the d times last digit, right? If we're putting in successive last digits further along, d goes to d plus 1. Right? So this gives us a way to convert numbers from one base to another. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Is that helpful in our problem or no? Not this algorithm. We really want to convert 2 to the I to a base 10 number, right? That's really what you want to do. The trouble is, here n starts out as 2 to the I. Okay. We need to keep track of what is 2 to the I div 10. And this is a very large number, right? So here we're building up the number from the right to the left. What we really want, I claim, is a base conversion algorithm where we convert our numbers instead from left to the right. Okay? So let's just see if we can figure out how to do this. Okay? Again, it's sort of like doing long division. Okay? What do we want to do? You've got your number
okay, 2 to the I. So what are we trying to do here? We want to actually now see how 2 to the, what is 2 to the I did 10 to the J. Right? That's really what I wanted to do. And I want to get the first few digits of this without giving us everything. Right? So can we do this using sort of a long division type algorithm? Where is, if I have A div B, where in long division does A and B go? Okay.
Is it
B div A? I'm trying to be
stupid
here. Is this right? Okay. So, what would that be for our problem here? Okay. This is 10 to the J. This is 2 to the I, right? 2 to the I. Or equivalently, this is 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, written in binary, isn't it? And you really want to know now, is 10 to the J, okay, for a given value of J, okay, is, just to figure out the first digit here, okay? So that means not really 10 to the J. You really, what am I trying to say? 10 to the J, this was to give us the first digit of this number, right? This is what, by dividing it by 10 to the J, the first digit we get here is going to be the first digit that we output. Really what we want to now know are what are the first several digits for a given value, for a given, you know, you have k input digits, okay? You want to now do the division 10 to the j into this number, okay? It's sort of like what you did in the other problem. The only real difference, I think, is that the bases are different, right? So can we do 10 to the j? Let's say this is, you know, 10 to the j is what? Let's say, let's say this was 100, or let's say this was, you know, 1,000 base 10. What's going to happen when we divide 1,000 base 2? Can we figure that one out? Okay.
I think it's easier to transfer to 1,000 base 10 into base 2 first.
That might be true. So how do we convert 1,000 base 10 into 2? Okay. It might be that we can convert this into a base 10 number, a base 2 number, and then do the division. Okay. But the trouble actually is we want the digits output in base 10, don't we?
No, we only want, we only want to know what the power of 2 is. So it seems like if we could figure out how to do the division, we could do the same kind of thing where we just kind of keep, you know, because the power of 2 on the bottom is just a 1 followed by an arbitrary number of 0.
Right.
So it seems like we should just be able to, you know, keep running through the smaller sections of divisions until we actually get remainder 0. And then say, oh, okay, well, and we just have to keep track of how many digits we have up top. We don't care what they are.
You have to keep track of how many. They have to keep track to make sure that this matches. My sense is you need to do the following. For a given value of 10 to the j, j is what you need to know. J is going to be telling you how many digits this number is ultimately going to be. Okay? What is the first number, the first digit
Okay, remember, we said that the first digit was the first value, the smallest, the number of digits that it was going to be, the remainder, we agreed. The digit was going to be, the first digit was going to be, basically, 2 to the I times 10 to the J. For the largest value of J, such that this was not 0. That was the first digit of the number. Am I right or am I speaking nonsense? Okay, I think it's tuning out, so I'm not sure. Okay? But somehow, you know, what you really want to know is, 2 to the I is your number. If you wanted to get the first, what are the first 10 digits, what are the first 3 digits of this? How do you get the first 3 digits of this? Basically, you take this number and you div it by 10 to the what? By 10 to the 1, 10 to the 2, 10 to the 3. Okay? So I claim that really what you want to do now is to find what is the smallest J such that you want to test if 2 to the I works. You want to find the smallest, the right size J, okay, and compute this quantity. Okay? Everybody sort of, yeah? I from 0 till the ungodly, okay? But what's important to know here is we're only interested in the first several digits of this thing, okay? So it is possible that really you only want to know is 10 to the j equal to the prescribed integer here. So you really want to test a particular value of j against this, okay? And see whether or not you know you get the desired digits that you want. Okay, I'm just being a little bit nebulous here, but I do believe this gives us a basic idea of how we can do it. Okay, it's sort of like just doing a long division. Okay, keeping track of the first several digits of the long division, and then dividing, you know, but making sure that you know doing the base conversions right. Okay? Any questions about that? Yeah?
There might not be an answer. There might be a stop value.
So under what conditions can we say that there's a stop value? Okay? Not so clear to me. Okay, this moment. Still a little bit fine, but this is somehow an approach that I think in principle gives us something. Okay, it needs to be thought out more. Okay, but I think that might do it. Any questions or comments? Do you guys see any promise in this or not really? Yeah.
A little bit of promise.
A little bit of promise? What do you got this? No idea. Do
I maybe yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so think about it a little bit, okay? But that's, I think, conceptually, that's what we want to do here. We agree conceptually this is what we want to do. And the only issues that we really have about is the question of how do we do this in such a way that we're dealing with these huge integers, that we don't have big problems because we're dealing with large integers. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so
let's move on to the next one, just to be sure, to make sure we have this other one. The last problem, I think, is also kind of interesting. Was this problem on the multiplication game. How many people thought about the multiplication game at all? You did. Did you get it or no?
I got it.
You got it. What? Thought about it when you were sleeping last night. Okay. So I think it looks like some people in the class were using that technique today, actually.
Hey.
But that's beside the point. Okay, that's my fault probably more than anything else. But what is this problem? This is actually kind of a cute problem, and maybe we should think about it a little bit. Okay? It says that you're starting out with an integer, which I guess was what, 1? What is the initial integer?
It is 1.
It is 1. And you've got two people, I guess, Stan and Ollie, are taking turns. Start out with 1. Stan proposes a digit to multiply it by. Then Ollie proposes a digit to multiply it by. And they take turns until the number gets to be greater than or equal to some target. Okay? And the person who takes it over the target is the winner. Right? So the question is, what are the numbers that these guys should be playing? Okay? Who wins if they don't play the game just right? Okay? Okay, any ideas how you might go about this? That goes from 1 to the target, basically. And say that if you're at this number, do you win or lose? Right? Or what is the, you know, can you win or lose? Right? That's really what you want. What is it that they want to know? Who will win or lose from a particular number? Okay, so what is the number? The number n is the target, right? And so the, wait. Right. They start from. They always start from 1. But there is a particular target in mind. Okay. Now, who will win? Who can win? You win if you get the number bigger than the target, right? What number can we prove? Number range. We can prove that you win by. You're in this number range and it's your move. Under what conditions do you win? You need to, can you show me some conditions in which you win? So basically, if you're allowed to multiply the number by from 2 to 9, right? So it seems to be that for any number that's t over 9, that is greater than or equal to t over 9, can you drive it over the target? If you are over here, this is sort of t over 9, it seems to me. Right? You can always drive it over the target from anywhere in here. Right? So this says that you win if your number is in this range, right? Now, under what conditions do you lose? We now continue to work backwards here to try to figure out under what condition, you know, will you lose? What happens if the number is here? If it's here, what can you do? Do you have any ability to win at all from, right, let's say something just less than 2 over t over 9?
You will always get a number.
You will always get a number that, whatever you do, you will be able to multiply it by something to kick it in here, right? So what does that situation mean? Okay? Under what set of numbers here will you lose?
If
want to say that if the number is between t divided by 18, do you lose in all these ranges? I don't think that's true. Why, it's your move now, right? What should you do if you're at this number t divided by 18?
The worst thing, the most you can do, is the least you can do is 2, which would bring it just up to t divided by 9. The other person wins.
Oh, I see. This is a half, right? You multiply by half. Okay. Right, so like this is a bit, point is this actually a smaller range. It starts to blow this more to scale. Right? So here at t divided by 18, you want to say that here you're in trouble. Why? You're going to have to, whatever you do, multiply it by 2. And that will put your opponent in the winning range, right? You can't multiply it by more, okay, but you can multiply it by less. What if, on the other hand, over here? Are you in the winning range over here? Okay. Well, so what is your winning range? Okay. So maybe your opponent would basically say, if you're here, you lose. Okay? If you're here, you're going to multiply it by 9. Right? Under what condition, if you're in here, can you win? How do you force a win? What do you have to do from this range, way back here? Okay. In what range can you force a win? Is that the way that you did it?
Basically, I did it exactly. I kind of did it the opposite way. I worked forward. I said, okay, in what cases am I just going to win on the first term? Okay, if that doesn't happen, what will happen? You know, in what cases will I automatically lose on the first term?
Okay.
Build up. Same idea as the other.
Okay. How long was the program?
Again, 5-10 lines.
Okay. So this is a doable problem also. Okay? So everybody sort of see the basic strategy? Okay, now I know I'm running along and this is sort of bad. Does anybody know about minimax search? Does the word minimax search come up in any of your games, your courses here?
Not here.
Alpha beta core program pruning? Did anybody ever talk about that?
I've done alpha beta pruning, but it's like 10 years ago.
Okay. There's this notion here of alternating. The best move for me is the one that screws my opponent the most. And the best opponent for my opponent's move is the one that screws me the most. There's this alternation, this recursive alternation that goes back and forth. And somehow when you talk about computer chess programs and how they solve, predict moves, basically I'm going to think the best of my possible moves, which is evaluated by my opponent making the worst of the possible moves for me, further on down the tree. So basically what you're doing is building a tree on top of these numbers of who wins, who loses, okay, what the right strategy is. Okay, so I expect that there's a nice recursive program that could be written to answer this. Or I think by doing our analysis like this is a nice simple way to do it also. Any questions? Okay, thanks for your attention. Those of you who signed up for Pizza with the Prof, I'll see you tomorrow. If not, and you want to, there's still a few slots, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
It's at 12:30, sir?
What?
It's at 12:30.
12:30 at my office.
I have a class that ends at 12:30, so I might be a few.
Okay, but I got your name. That's all I know. Okay, let me finish this again.